The following podcast is brought to you by Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in beautiful Burlington, Ontario. Golf at its finest, million-dollar views, but greens fees that fit your budget. $65 to play during the week on a course that would cost you at least twice that much were it in the GTA. Crosswinds has taken all the precautions necessary during this pandemic, so you don't have to worry about your health or anyone else's. Tee times are going fast, so book yours now for an unforgettable golf experience. And by the way, Crosswinds is now booking weddings for 2021. So if you're thinking of getting married, this venue would be perfect for you. Go to crosswindsgolf.com for more information. Now, let's start the podcast. And welcome to episode 189 of Hebsy on Sports from the makeshift studio in Little Italy. I'm Mark Hebscher. And from the mothership in New Toronto, it's Toronto Mike at the controls. Today on the show, mark these dates down in your sports calendar. Ready? June 20th, July 8th, July 9th, July 10th, July 30th, July 31st, August 1st, September 30th, October 6th, December 25th. Okay, the last one's Christmas, we know. All the other ones. Our potential starting dates for training camp, for the playoffs, for this, for that, for the draft, for all that stuff. Return to play dates in the major leagues are coming fast and furious. Subject to change, of course, depending on number 19, COVID. Everyone hoping to get a season in, and of course, they've got to have the playoffs or the leagues will have to return all that TV money. Meanwhile, golf is back. The PGA Tour back, and it looks the same. Except you don't have spectators lining the fairways. And usually the opening rounds of some of these tournaments, there's, you know, I don't know, a few hundred spectators on the 14th watching, you know, John Rahm tee off. So not that big of a difference. Looks pretty good on television. Nice and green. The ball is white. You know, the flagstick, stuff like that. Nobody's touching the flagship. Flagsticks. Flagship. All right. NASCAR. This is the last bastion of intolerance and Jim Crow, and they've finally woken up and will no longer use the racist rebel flag as a symbol. Thank goodness for that. And by the way, who's going to be allowed in your bubble once they have things figured out? And I'm talking NBA, NHL, MLS. They're all going to be in a bubble. So we'll figure that one out. It's anybody's guess. First up, though, Mike, big news from me. I'm getting a cat today.
Congrats, buddy. Give us a little detail. Where are you getting it from? Does it have a name yet? What can you tell us about this cat? Otis.
2 years old. It's an outdoor cat. Muscular cat. Like, I think the cat's been working out. You know, like, hang in there, baby, that stuff.
On the juice. Okay. Yeah, right. I can see. Yes.
No, I don't think on the juice. I don't know. I just think it works out. It's an outdoor cat. A lot of climbing, a lot of jumping. Male, you know, solid through the chest there. And unfortunately right now is living with another cat and a Great Dane and is kind of too skittish. And it's unfortunate that not in a good living situation. So he's going to go to a loving home today. So how do you prepare your place for a cat?
Well, have you ever had
a
cat
before?
It's
not like you're going on a date or something like that. Like, well, I got to make sure the place is nice and clean, you know, because I want to impress. I'm going to wear good clothes. This is for a cat. This is for your roommate for the next however many years.
How have you ever owned a cat before?
Many.
Okay, well, you know the drill then. I don't know anything about cats, but I guess you need something like you need kitty litter and all that stuff, right? You're all set?
That stuff, yeah, it's easy. No problem. That's easy. Right. Cats are very independent. And in this case here, this is going to be an outdoor cat anyway. So I've got a covered area in the backyard, shelter area, so that the cat can't get into the house, at least it'll be in a, you know, fairly warm environment. There'll be water, food, little bed there, maybe in a cardboard box.
I can't wait for next week's update on how the first week of the Otis went.
Otis Redding. Right. Otis Sistrunk.
I thought it was the Otis Nixon. I thought maybe there. But
Nixon? Otis Taylor, one of my favorite wide receivers in the NFL, played for the Kansas City Chiefs back in the day.
Otis Day from Otis Day Animal House. Nights. Yeah, Animal House, right?
Yeah, Otis Day in the Nights. All right, so Otis the cat's coming today. A black and white cat. I don't like cats or any animals for that matter that have multicolor, different colors on the faces. I don't like a cat that's got like white face with black splotches. So this cat has a white face and then black here and some, I would say 60-40 white, black, as far as coloring goes. Good looking cat.
Good stuff. We'll need to see
a picture. Whites and blacks. Hey, we're going to talk about that later on. Okay, Mike. So phase two, And I believe there's a total of four phases, if I'm not mistaken. The back to play, initiative, protocol, whatever you want to call it. And it's got to be in line with the four phases of return to life, according to each individual medical community, depending on where you live. You live here? Oh, salons are open. You live there? Sorry, not open. You guys are no good. You get haircuts there, but you can't get haircuts there. It hasn't quite reached that. But with sports, sort of one league is looking at the other. So let's talk about the NHL first. Phase two of the NHL's return to play protocol began this week, with teams given the option of opening practice facilities to small groups of players for on and off ice workouts under strict health and safety measures. The Leafs are working out in groups of six, as there are many other teams. They're hoping to begin their training camp July the 10th. But for now, players have to make travel arrangements to one of the two hub cities. We don't know what those two are going to be. We don't know when the NHL is going to announce when those two hub cities are, where, what those two cities are. And then, of course, Mike, once that announcement is made, people are going to have to get to those places. And what if they were in Canada? What if one of them was going to be in Canada? What would have to be done for one of the hub cities to be in Canada? Well, the feds are going to have to allow NHL players from the US and from Europe to circumvent the 14-day mandatory quarantine and cross the border with impunity. If not, these players would have to come to Canada if it was one of the hubs and wait 14 days. So it would be June the 26th that they would have to arrive in Canada. 14 days of quarantine takes you to July the 10th, and then you're good to start your training camp for the restart for the playoffs. That sounds like a lot, and I don't think the feds would do it. Do you?
I think there'd be some backlash if they made an exception for professional athletes.
Right, and no reason to have the hub in Canada at all.
No, right? Although outside of Ontario and Quebec, though, it sounds safe. Like it does, there seems to be very few cases.
Okay, so if you're the community of Vancouver, let's say, and you have not had any new cases or virtually zero, would you be able to, okay, let's bring in all these other players as long as they're in a bubble? Remember, you can't go to the games. You can't go to the practices. You can't get close to these players. So would it be that big of a deal? Like, would Vancouver be going, woohoo, like they won the Olympics? Woohoo, we got the hub!
No, I don't know. I don't know what the allure is, but I'm sure there's some benefit to the community that I'm not seeing. Maybe it's the golf courses and all that stuff. The
hotels,
takeout
restaurants,
orders,
catering, you know, all that stuff, right? Your family's going to likely live there in some way, so you would have a big bubble and be good, I guess, for the economy. But what would you have? Like, would you have local media like, we think we spotted, you know, Connor McDavid? Where would you have spotted him? You can't get close to the guy. He's going to be in a bubble.
Right. Right.
Unless you're on the other side of the glass. It's like, there he is.
Like a zoo.
Yeah, like an animal zoo.
Sell tickets to go see the players through the glass. Right.
Right. So I don't think that's going to happen in Canada. Let's say they're both in the States. That means anybody that's in Canada now probably won't have to go through the 14-day quarantine in the States. I don't know that for sure, but I think you can go into the United States now and not have to do the 14. If you did, you'd have to get there by June 26th in order for a July 10th training camp to start. So right now, everything is TBA, right? Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was.
NHL hoping for an August 1st restart to the season. Huh. And that would begin with the play-in round of the postseason. Leafs, Columbus, August the 1st. What am I doing August 1st? I'll be up at my friend's cottage.
Oh, yeah?
Take the little device out to the end of the dock. Leafs Columbus. 38 degrees outside.
And that's a best of five, right? That's a best of five. Right. Okay.
That'd be best. With, remember, no home ice advantage, except for the last change.
Sure.
Because you're playing in a bubble somewhere.
Right. Right.
In a neutral site. Okay. The NBA planning to begin camps July 9th to 11th in the Orlando bubble. Teams will briefly quarantine before beginning formal training camps, before regular season games resume July 30th, sources said. So July 30th, potential start for the NBA. A couple days later, August 1st, potential start for the NHL.
Wow. And, of course, we should just wonder aloud, like, what happens if they start this up? Let's say the NHL starts all this up on August 1st or whatever, and then a couple of guys test positive at some point. Like, what happens then? Like, I mean, I'm just all this work, all this effort, and it might actually mess up the start of your next season.
Someone is going to hide something. You're going to find out that they're not everyone is going to be forthcoming, even if they should be.
Well, of course
should we
they
test
should
this
be.
Guy. Test this guy. Are we testing people every day, once a week, twice a week? What if someone shows symptoms and they get tested, and then the test result comes out that it's positive, and the people that that person had come in contact with at that point were just in that bubble that they were a part of? Do they say, "Okay, your bubble is eliminated, and all the teams that are part of it are eliminated, and we go on with these teams"? Where there hasn't been a case, a positive case?
Still sounds crazy to me. I mean, a lot of states in the United States, a lot of states have their numbers rising quite rapidly.
Well, because there's more testing.
But also. Yeah, but still, these cases exist. Like, you're right.
Right, but they didn't know that those cases existed because not enough people were tested.
No,
this is where the numbers, you know, can drive you nuts. Oh, it must have been because of the March break. Oh, it must have been because of Trinity Bellwoods. Must have been because of Black Lives Matter and all those rallies. Also, there's way more testing now than there was a month ago, 2 months ago.
Right,
so
right.
It's up to each individual jurisdiction, I guess, as to whether they can go back and to what degree. Restaurants, 50% capacity? Is that what we're going for? 6 foot distancing, masks, and half capacity? Will that work? And how many people are going to, like, for example, Mike, if they said, okay, half capacity, are you going to run to your favorite restaurant now? Right. And sit 6 feet away from someone? Or are you going to order in from that restaurant like you've been doing for the last couple of months and eat it at home?
I think the patios is the bigger bet. It really seems like the outdoors seems to slow down the transference of COVID-19. Absolutely. So the patio, you could get me on a patio because remember...
Wait, Mike.
Go ahead.
The kitchen, though, is still an enclosed space unless you can go back to that kitchen and ensure that everyone's 6 feet apart and... social distancing protocol and hand washing and masks and all that.
As long as they're not sneezing on my food.
I don't care if you're
sitting
on a patio. You're on a patio. You just want your food. You don't care so much about what's going on
in
the kitchen.
We're already eating the food. Like, I don't know about you, but I've done a lot of takeout the last few months. We're already eating the food. Unless they're sneezing directly on my meal, which I'm going to trust that they're not sneezing directly on my meal. Okay. It's very difficult to transfer it through
contact.
Then
can you trust that same restaurant to go to there and make sure that you're safe if you're going to eat there?
If I'm on a patio and the people in my pod are with me, otherwise, you know, the waiter or waitress is wearing a mask. You know, you got to pick your spots, right? You got to be sensible about everything. I did bump into Peter Gross yesterday in the park, Curtis. And,
where were you?
Marie Curtis Park. So he was rollerblading and I was biking. This is like the border of Mississauga and Etobicoke on the south end. Park. Yeah, it's literally Etobicoke Creek runs through it. So the border, like half of it's in Mississauga, half of it's in Etobicoke. But we had a pretty good chat, 6 feet apart, felt very safe, you know. So it's all about being sensible, assuming everyone else outside your pod has COVID. And, you know, when you go in somewhere to wear a mask and when you're outside, just keep your distance.
Right. The TTC is going to mandate mask wearing.
Good. I feel like
and
that's a long time
coming.
They're
going to give out masks to those that don't have them.
Like Costco.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Right. I mean,
if you're going to mandate something that hasn't been mandated for the last 3 months, you've got to, you know, ensure that everyone getting aboard is, you know, given an equal opportunity.
Right.
If
right.
You don't have a mask, here you go.
Right. And Hebsy, as you know, all the countries that impose the mandatory mask right away, like South Korea and other countries like that, their numbers, they really did contain COVID-19 right off the bat. Like if 80% of people wore masks in public, we could halt the spread of COVID-19. Bam! 80% of people wearing a mask.
Yeah, we're going to see with all of the rallies lately whether there's going to be a residual effect 14 days later. Because people can track. I remember when March break happened, yeah, there was a spike there. But I think with more testing now, you're going to see. Just the sight of thousands of people this far apart yet wearing masks outdoors I think gave a lot of folks a sense of false security.
We'll see. But I think if it's outdoors and you're wearing masks, you're okay.
And not just young people, that many people gathered together in that close proximity. How much of an effect did the masks have?
I think we'll find out very little. I think we'll find out very little bump in numbers because of the outdoor rallies with masks on. But we'll see.
I hope so. Back to the NBA. So the six teams eliminated, they're going to have 8 regular season games before they start the playoffs in the NBA. The NHL is not going to do that. The NHL is going right to their play-in round of the playoffs. But the NBA is going to play 8 regular season games that's going to eliminate the 6 teams eliminated.
Right.
And then there's a possible play-in tournament for the number 8 seed, which would leave Orlando, the bubble city, within 35 to 40 days. So those teams would leave. The NBA expects the conference finals will end within a maximum of 82 days, leaving the 2 NBA finalists to start September the 30th. NBA finals, September 30th. So they're looking at August 1st, July 30th. So the entire month of August, the first part is going to be the elimination of the teams and then the setting of the 8 seeds in each conference. And then I guess 7 weeks of playoffs. And then the finals starting September 30th.
Whew. Right? And then when
so they look like they got their ducks in a row better than the NHL.
How come it looks that way?
Positive test.
Like, what's the difference? I guess there's more players on a hockey team. Is that what's the difference otherwise? Is it just because we have more Canadian-based teams or what? I don't know what the difference is.
What do you mean?
Like why is it just simply the league's better organized on this front? Like, why does the NBA seem so far ahead of the NHL?
Well, was the NBA the league not to announce that they weren't going to play any more games immediately?
Well, they had the positive test, right? They are the league with the positive test.
Had the NHL had a player test positive, would they have done the same thing?
Well, I will never know, but I would like to think they would have. But we'll
like
never
to
know.
Think so.
Right, right.
But I think we can agree, Mike, you and I, that as far as professional sports leagues go and the leadership of those leagues, that the NBA is ahead of the NHL.
I would not argue that. You're right, Hibsy. You're right.
Okay. MLS is back. That's the name of the restart. Remember, the league never played any games.
Well, it did.
Training camp. Oh, they did. No, they did.
They had one game here.
One game.
Right.
Right. So MLS is back, begins July 8th in their Orlando bubble. They've been split into groups, East and West. Toronto FC is in Group C in the East, along with Montreal, New England, and DC United. So they're going to play. They're going to play, I don't know, 3 games a day for 8 weeks.
How's the German league done? Have you caught any of the action? I know we had some debate about piped in noises. Anything on that front? Like, how's that? Do you have any update on that? Or
I don't have an update. Some of the games have the piped in. Some of them don't. Some of it's really subtle. Like, at first, you're not even sure. Have they piped something in? Because the audio engineer is riding the pot very low with the chanting. And so it's texture to the sound. It's, what is that sound? You don't want the sound of the ball hitting the post to be so loud and echoing through the stadium. So you have to produce a couple of layers of din, you know, of murmuring of a crowd sound or whatever. And that's a good audio engineer there. And that audio engineer has hundreds of little, you know, just press that.
Sure. Pod
sound effect.
Right, right. Oh, yes, right. Like a soundboard, a giant soundboard.
Yeah, and so you're mixing that in as if you would be mixing. If someone said to you, Mike, you're going to be at a hockey game, and live, as the game is going on, you're going to have to anticipate and, there's an end-to-end rush. I better bring the crowd noise up.
Well, you know, I hate this, right? Even hearing you describe it, I actually hate it.
But you haven't seen a game, though, yet that has that, have you?
No, I have not.
But so you hate something that you're equating with the Fox puck.
No, you know what? I didn't even hate
it. You are, because you haven't
heard
it.
I didn't hate the Fox puck.
I'll tell you what. I could play you the sound of an actual game with real fans in the stands, and I could play you the enhanced version of a German Bundesliga game.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of a difference you would know.
It doesn't matter, Hebsy. It doesn't matter if it sounds better. It matters that I know it's fake. Like, it's because, well, because I know there's no fans in the stands. I know it's piped in, and they're not going to try to trick you. So everybody will be in on the gimmick, which is, hey, we're going to make it sound like there's a crowd here, even though it's empty stands. Because I know that, like, you'd have to hypnotize me and convince me there are really fans there, and maybe I'd be fine if the piped in noise.
So suppose you're playing, Mike. Suppose you're at the arena. You're there. Yeah. You take the pass at center, and you got a breakaway going in. There's no fans there at all. There's nothing.
Right.
It's quiet.
Right.
Wouldn't you be more motivated if there was some sound coming to
you make it sound like
you on to score that goal in the breakaway?
Do you think they're piping that sound? That's TV only. Like, that's gonna
I'm
be
only asking you. Okay. I'm asking you if you were in the arena.
Have you ever played beer league with maybe one guy's girlfriend showed up and you had that breakaway?
Yeah, but I've never played
it. Felt
pro
like 20,000 were in the stands.
I can't make the comparison.
Trust me, but when you're in the zone, player, you don't care who's in the stands.
You're an NHL player, right? And in your head, you're hearing, now the puck is at center. Now Boone's got it. Toronto Mike's got a breakaway. In your head, you're hearing Chris Cuthbert call it.
Okay.
And everyone at home is off the couch. Toronto Mike's got a breakaway for the Leafs. Could win it.
Five hole.
In your head, do you not want to hear the roaring of the crowd?
Not if there's no one in the stands. I'm not stupid. Like, what?
What? You'd be paying attention anyway. Players say they don't even see people in the stands.
Right, so they don't need to hear anything.
You're focused on the ice.
They've never. You score a goal in an away game, right? Like, if the America had scored the golden goal in that 2010. Yeah.
I asked you a question.
Let me hear it again.
Would you, okay, in the Stanley Cup final, mm-hmm. You know there's no fans in the stands.
Of course.
Your coaches just go, get out there and score.
Right.
You're telling me you wouldn't be more motivated, you wouldn't have more excitement in you if you had heard that sound?
Hebsy,
but you had headphones on, let's say. You're wearing headphones.
Hebsy.
Bluetooth, and they're piping in the sound of your family going, come on, Dad! Come on, Dad!
No, this is ridiculous. If an NHL player is playing in a Stanley Cup final, if that player requires some piped-in sound in order to motivate him to excel, we got bigger problems on our hands.
Oh, really?
Please.
You think
please.
So, huh?
You can play in an empty...
You don't think that a player would be more motivated if he was playing at home with a loud crowd behind him?
Is it a real crowd?
Versus on the, hey, like I said, you're conditioned at home. You get the puck, you got a breakaway, you hear it. It helps you.
I'm going to start typing up my letter to Sportsnet executives. If they even dare pipe in some sound while I watch the Leaf game, then
Toronto
I'm going to send that.
Toronto Mike will not watch if you're going to pipe in sound.
I didn't say that.
Toronto Mike doesn't want to be fooled. He doesn't want to have the wool pull over his eyes.
Right.
He doesn't want to be tricked.
Toronto Mike thinks
thinking.
It's dumb. It's dumb. And I was okay. I was okay if that glowing puck on the Fox. I even watched some. The Crazy Eights were the big thing at the time. I remember, you know, Lindros and Recchi and LeClaire.
But Renberg.
Renberg, right? What did I say? Oh, Lindros, Renberg, and LeClaire, right? And you're right, not right. That was a different line. Okay. Anyway, bottom line is, I watched a few games of the glowing puck. I was fine with it. It was different than piping in the crowd noise to me.
Golf is back. It's the same. The Charles Schwab Challenge going on at the Colonial at Fort Worth. The best golfers in the world. Tiger Woods not there, but Phil's there, and Justin and Spieth is there, and Rory. I think is Rory there. Anyway, so there's no spectators, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem to have affected play in the least.
Right.
These guys, they're zeroed in.
Right.
I mean, you know, you see the ball, you see the pin, you see the fairway. You don't see how many people are in the crowd. And a lot of times on the first and second day, you know, the fairways are sprinkled with a few dozen fans, you know, lining the fairways. It's not that big of a deal. So in this particular case, these guys are out there. It's you versus the golf course. And you're playing with a guy who you could easily stay 6 feet away from, and your caddy too. So they had the first round yesterday. Justin Rose and Harold Varner, the third, lead there at 7-under. Canada's Adam Hadwin is in a tie for 7th place. He's at 5-under. And his countryman, Corey Connors, is at 4-under par. And, you know, you can play golf. You can watch golf. It really isn't that different at all. The easiest sport, for sure, to make the transition or to ensure physical distancing is golf. How do I know this, Mike?
How do you know this, Hebsy?
Our sponsor.
Crosswinds
Golf and Country Club. Was there the other day, played with my sons, played with the great Greg Brady. Just a beautiful day. Wow. And as soon as you go through the gates there, their signs tell you, look, we need you to park over here. Don't come until 15 minutes before your tee time. Send one person to the pro shop only, right? That physical distancing, you're far enough away. There's a big plastic shield there, as there is in most places, you know, between you and the not the cashier, but the or the receptionist, but the
person, the
customer sales person that's on the other side of that. So no issues there at all. And, you know, hey, stay 6 feet away from me. That's not a problem on the golf course. Don't touch the flag sticks. No problem at all. It was great. Beautiful day. What great views there. You're nestled between Rattlesnake Point, which is like Milton, and Mount Nemo, which is Burlington, right? That's where there's a split in the Niagara Escarpment, and Crosswinds is like right in between, nestled right in there. Absolutely beautiful. It's in great shape. And it's like I say, $65 during the week. I think it goes up to $68 after the 1st of July.
Who won between you and Greg?
Put a course like Crosswinds in the GTA within, let's say, 30 minutes of downtown Toronto, it would cost you easily $150, $180 to play that course. It's like $65, $68 in Burlington, which is an hour, less than an hour from downtown Toronto.
Right.
Even with the traffic the way it is. So check out crosswindsgolf.com for more information. Book your tee time now. Not easy to get a tee time. Go online, get her done, pick your date, take your friends out. You'll have a good time. Brady, by the way, is a lefty.
Like Mike Weir.
Yeah, like Mike Weir. But he didn't hit the ball like Mike.
Who won? I need to know. Like, who won between you and Greg Brady? Okay.
But we didn't play that well. But the greens were really fast. I mean, like lightning. Like if you sneeze, your ball rolls off the green.
Are your sons better than you?
They can hit the ball further, but they're not as adept around the greens. Like with those guys, it's like, just kill it.
Right. Like Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. Almost like Happy Gilmore. Like just boom, let it go.
Right.
And, but everybody had a good time. And that's the most important thing, the social aspect of golf. And you can be very sociable. Being 6 feet apart or more.
Oh, yeah. Good for you, man. It's good to get out there. And Crosswinds, great sponsor. I've got the hat here. And it sounds like it's nestled in that. It sounds like a beautiful place and an ideal getaway during these tumultuous times. Sounds amazing.
It's gorgeous. And once they can utilize the banquet facilities again, which again is up to, you know, local public health officials as to when that can happen, you can roll that out. Then they'll be able to have tournaments and banquets and weddings and that type of thing. But for right now, they have to follow, they got to follow the rules, man.
Right. Cool.
And public safety, the most important thing.
Good stuff.
Okay. Tom Verducci of the MLB Network asked Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred whether he could guarantee that the 2020 season will take place in some fashion. Quote, Manfred, we're going to play baseball in 2020 100%. If it has to be under the March 26th agreement, if we get to that point in the calendar, so be it. So we don't know how many games the season will entail. We don't know what the playoff structure will be. And we don't know whether a second wave of this pandemic, God forbid, will interrupt or even cancel the baseball season altogether. But they're going full steam ahead. Let's go. In his comments, Manfred is referring to that March 26th accord between MLB and the Players Association, in which the players agreed to prorate their 2020 salaries based on the number of games played in the regular season. So the players consider that the matter of compensation to be settled already because of that agreement in March. As noted, they agreed to prorate based on the number of regular season games played, but the owners interpret that agreement as allowing them to negotiate the matter of player salaries based on the likelihood that fans will not be able to attend games for most or even all of the 2020 season and the all-important postseason, which will be expanded to 16 teams. So the owners look at it differently. They say, wait a second. We were thinking in March 26th that when the playoffs came, when the regular season came, fans would be allowed to go. And we made that part of our agreement. But now that we're positive that no fans are going to be allowed in the games, we gotta renegotiate that. So the owner's emphasis is getting to the postseason as quickly as possible, right? For all that TV money. And the players want a longer regular season for salary purposes. You don't want your salary prorated on a 48 game schedule. You're hoping for 85 games or 92 games or 108 games. So these dueling incentives are underlying the present negotiations, and baseball is just, they're in trouble. Manfred wants a 48 or 50 game regular season. The players want way more regular season games. And they say that if they don't get it, they're not going to play. So, yay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, the best tweet of the week came from Brian Monzo of WFAN in New York on Twitter. Quote, new proposal for Major League Baseball. A two-game season, three DHs in the lineup. Each field has three hungry lions roaming the outfield. And in the third and ninth innings, the ball is lit on fire. Every player's stance must be similar to Julio Franco. 85% pay.
I got a dumb Canadian question. Is it WFAN or WFAN?
Either.
Okay, I just never heard WFAN before. But yeah.
Well, it's called The Fan in New York.
Well, yeah, but they call it, yes, okay, because when it, we call
do
letters.
Do they call it CJCL?
Yeah, well, I mean, the that's fan. The call letters. Yeah, but that's two different fan. Things. That's two different
do
things.
They call CFR, do they call News Talk 1010 CFRB?
Yeah, but you said, why did you add the W in there?
Well, that's the call letters, WFAN.
Right, right.
So, you know, you can call it WFAN, The Fan, WFAN.
Okay, I've never heard WFAN. That's all. I know it's The Fan, but okay.
Again, whatever you want to call it, whatever, you know.
CJCL.
Anyway, so I just think that's hysterically funny. And I would go for that idea at this point. I would say, go out, like, find Major League Baseball. 2020 is a weird year anyway. Why not?
You know what will be the big controversy? Will be the poor lions. Why are you keeping these poor lions hungry roaming the outfield? That'll be the controversy if they do
that. But the funniest part of it is the ball will be lit on fire in the third and ninth innings. Now, have you ever played the poker game called baseball before?
No.
Okay, in the game baseball, if you get a 3 or a 9, it's a wild card. Oh. So it's a poker game, but 3s and 9s are wild.
That's a lot of wild cards, yeah.
And if you draw a 4, you get an extra card for free. He didn't include that in it, but I think in the third and ninth innings, like in the poker game baseball, we light the ball on fire. It's a wild card.
Okay. Well, he ran out of characters, I think, but
anyway,
yeah.
I just thought it's gotten so ridiculous. And while all this is going on, Mike, while all this in baseball is going on, they held the June draft this week because it's June and what the hell?
Right.
It's not going to make a difference. All the teams are still around. These players are draft eligible.
Right.
So why would we delay the draft or anything? Let's go. So the Blue Jays draft a kid, a shortstop out of Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, named Austin Martin. Not Aston Martin, like the car, the DB4 that James Bond drives.
Right.
Not Austin Matthews. Okay. But Austin Martin, 5th overall, and people are already having fun.
Well, it sounds a little like Hotty Toddy, like this would be like Thurston Howell III's nephew or something.
Austin Martin from Vanderbilt University?
Right.
Do you know what Vanderbilt University's nickname is for their sports teams?
What?
The Commodores.
Oh, like Lionel Richie?
Yeah, like Lionel. I think the word Commodore.
Easy like term. Sunday morning.
Commodore Vanderbilt. Okay. So anyway, he goes 5th overall. So apparently the best hitter in the draft, the most pure hitter in the draft. If you read the scouting reports, this guy's the next, you know, Alex Rodriguez or whatever.
I'll take it.
Anyway, 5th overall, he's a college kid. All their draftees were out of colleges. At the number 42 spot, the Jays had another draft pick, right-hander pitcher C.J. Van Eyck of Florida State University. And then at number 77, they took right-hand pitcher Trent Palmer of Jacksonville University. With the 106th pick, right-hand pitcher Nick Frasso of Loyola Marymount University. Not to be confused with Loyola of Chicago. Not to be confused with another Division I school, Loyola of New Orleans. This would be Loyola Marymount University.
Which is the most famous of the Loyolas, I would say, from March Madness and things.
Is it?
I think so. Like, that's the one I remember from some March Madness upsets and stuff.
How many NCAA championships have they won?
I'm going to guess 0, but they did.
And how many have Loyola of Chicago won?
Oh, I would have guessed zero. See, I would have lost that bet as usual.
Yeah. And this caused a bit of a problem with your friend Caitlin McGrath from The Athletic. What? When she was posting all the draftees, she put down Loyola. She didn't put down Loyola Marymount because, you know, a lot of times it's like, I mean, freaking Loyolas are there out there, but there mm-hmm. happen to be three. And instead of putting LMU, which is Loyola Marymount, which is in Los Angeles, she mentioned Loyola. And I just sort of gently said, it's Loyola Marymount because there's a bunch of Loyolas. To which she said, what is it with college sports and all these, you know, schools that sound the same?
Miami of Ohio or whatever. Yeah.
Miami of Ohio, Miami of Florida.
Right. By the way, I'm glad you called her my friend. I'm sure she's lovely, but I've never actually met her.
I thought she was on your show once.
No. No, sir.
I'm thinking of Christina Rutherford.
Yes, Christina's been on the show. Yes.
My mistake. But anyway, you should get her on. She's a good writer.
I will. I would get her on.
Yeah. The Athletic, by the way, The Athletic, I think they blew out like 8% or 9% of their staff, which is very troubling.
Oh, man.
When you consider that their business model was and still is, you know, providing excellent journalism and, you know, having really some top-notch journalists, a lot of beat writers who, of course, really can't cover their teams because there is no sports going on. And they've had to make, some changes there.
Well, I heard it's more than just blowing out 8%. Then everybody who was left, I think, took a 10 to 20% salary cut. So, right. Yeah, it's tough times.
Anyway, Nick Frasso at number 106 from Loyola Marymount and number 136 outfielder Zach Britton. Not to be confused with Baltimore reliever Zach Britton.
Right.
This is outfielder Zach Britton from Louisville. Louisville, as they say. Louisville. So, okay. So listen, I told you Vanderbilt was the Commodores. Do you know the nicknames of these other schools that I mentioned these guys? Florida State University. You know that.
Yeah. The Hurricanes? What are we
doing? No. That's the University of Miami of Florida.
Remind me.
Florida State University.
Yeah.
Very controversial war cry that people don't like.
Seminoles.
Correct. The Seminoles. How about Jacksonville University?
I don't know.
Same as the Miami professional football team.
The Dolphins.
Correct.
That was a good clue.
Loyola Marymount University.
Oh, they're like the, are they like the, I don't, like George Washington's or something? I can't remember. There's something American historical.
Lions.
Oh, not even close. Okay, thank you. I get all my my NCAA March Madness upset teams mixed up.
And Louisville? You know Louisville, don't you?
Yeah, the Louisville Sluggers, of course. The Cardinals, I believe.
Correct, Cardinals. There you go. Hey, good stuff, Mike.
Well, you helped me with that, but Dolphins quite a bit there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Jacksonville University, that's where Artis Gilmore went to school, a great basketball player. In fact, I saw someone, what was it on? Oh, I know, it was on The Wire. The show The Wire. I'd never seen it before, and I'm into season 5 now.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And one of the kids on the corner is wearing a Gilmore 53 Chicago Bulls jersey.
You know, that's my favorite show of all time. And the camera I'm pointing to now is sitting on the DVD box set of The Wire.
Well, I just started season 5, the final season.
Okay, yeah, you're going to spend some time with the Baltimore Sun.
But what I do like is the fact that a lot of these kids, well, this one kid in particular, I guess is wearing, like every show is wearing a different throwback jersey.
Great show, man.
His mom buys him all these, you know the one I'm talking about, buys him all these throwback jerseys for, you know, his wardrobe. So he's got some, but he can't wear them at school. He has to wear that burgundy colored, you know, shirt.
Right.
You know, kids can't be wearing different outfits.
Right.
It'd be too distracting. The presence of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events runs contrary to our commitment to providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all fans, our competitors, and our industry. Bringing people together around a love for racing and the community that it creates is what makes our fans and sports special. The display of the Confederate flag will be prohibited from all NASCAR events and properties. That a statement from NASCAR, which is the National Association of Stock Car Racing. It's an acronym, NASCAR.
And one of the better acronyms. Like scuba.
It's a good one, yeah.
Self-contained underwater breathing apparatus.
Tell
me what year that quote is from. Is that from what?
That's 19... from today, this week. But that quote should have been from 1964 when the Civil Rights Act was enacted. I guess the bill was passed in 65. But anyway, 1964, that's when NASCAR should have said, yep, absolutely. But no, NASCAR is the good old boys. And NASCAR has always been and will likely continue to be for some time known as a sport for good old boys and not really inclusive when it comes to people of color. For example, in 1964, there were zero NHL players who were black. Willie O'Ree had appeared 4 years earlier. It would be a number of years until Mike Marson of the Washington Capitals would become the second black NHL player. So there were no NHL players who were black, and there were no NASCAR drivers who were black in 1964. Let's fast forward to 2020. There's one black driver in NASCAR. There are several black NHL players. Bubba Wallace is NASCAR's only black driver. Earlier this week, he called for the rebel flag to be banished from racetracks. And he should be proud of himself today. And he is. By speaking out, he brought new attention to the issue that has plagued NASCAR since day one and forced them to act. Wallace raced to an 11th place finish at Martinsville Speedway Wednesday night in a car with a special Black Lives Matter paint scheme. He was asked before the race for his thoughts on the decision handed down hours earlier, and he said, quote, bravo, props to NASCAR and everybody involved. This has been a stressful couple of weeks, said Wallace. There's no doubt the biggest race of my career was tonight. There's a lot of emotions on the racetrack and off the track that are riding with us, but tonight is something special. Mike, the history of NASCAR is filled with perceived racism, real racism, in an area of the United States that is notorious for its symbols of white supremacy and Jim Crow. One of those is the rebel flag, which, if you recall, and this boggles the mind, and thanks to my friend Mitch Garber from Montreal for pointing this out, the rebel flag was the symbol on the car, the General Lee, on the popular television show, The Dukes of Hazzard. Now, besides Daisy Duke in her cut-off jean shorts, that General Lee car was the most popular feature of the show. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Hebsy, you're talking to a guy who, that was my favorite show of all time, and I had a model General Lee in the house that had that flag on it. So I've had that flag in my house, and
Did you understand what the rebel flag was about?
I was completely ignorant.
Did you ask anyone?
No, I thought it was just the cool decoration on top of the General Lee. Like, I never even...
But you equated it with the Southern United States?
I think once I learned, like, as I got older and learned about Lynyrd Skynyrd and stuff, I definitely understood this to be a Southern U.S. symbol. And then you learn about the Civil War, and then you're educated as to what it symbolizes.
But in the 80s, when Dukes of Hazzard was on, I mean, the way they talked on it and just the lifestyle and the characters. I mean, it wasn't like Green Acres, which was a comedy show and like, these are, you know, a bunch of adults. They were from the city. They came and went to some small town. I don't know. Where was Petticoat Junction? Was it supposed to be North Carolina or Virginia or something like that?
Right.
So there was sort of that, oh, okay, Beverly Hillbillies, you know, where were they from?
New York, Tennessee, right?
And they went to Beverly Hills.
Right, Beverly.
As television-watching, media-absorbing kids, our perception of the Southern United States was white people talking funny, eating funny kind of foods.
Like Cooter.
Right. Racing cars. I mean, think about this. NASCAR began, auto racing began in the United States because the Ford Motor Company, General Motors, Plymouth, Chrysler, realized that young men in the 50s, post-war, were into cars, cruising down Main Street or taking the back roads or whatever it was, glamorized years later by the Bruce Springsteens of the world. But of course, James Dean at the time, rebel without a cause.
Right.
And this idea of racing and getting in your car and having the freedom, the independence to own your own car and to drive on newly paved highways as America was, you know, expanding. This is where NASCAR began. Where these good old boys were buying Chevys and Fords and spicing them up and putting in, you know, big block engines in those babies and racing on dirt tracks.
Dodge Chargers.
Way before the Dodge Charger.
Yeah, that's the General Lee, right?
Way before the Dodge Charger. Right, okay. Dodge Charger was in the 60s.
Well, I was just thinking of the General Lee.
Yeah, but that's way later. I'm talking in the 50s. I'm talking these guys rode dirt tracks and then eventually ovals. You know, I'm talking about guys like Richard Petty's father, Lee Petty, Freddie Lorenzen, Junior Johnson. That's the history of NASCAR. All white guys. All the fans, white. All of the sponsors, white guys, right? Goodyear tires, Winston cigarettes. And the rebel flag was a part of that. The way the rebel flag was part of the University of Mississippi, known as the Rebels of Ole Miss. I was at a game there once. Man, it was a sea. It was against Alabama. It was a sea of rebel flags, waving rebel flags.
Whew.
And you're talking about an area of the world where there are many, many statues of Confederate soldiers, generals, that were part of the terrible history of the United States when it comes to racism, slavery. Terrible. So it's good. It's good that that NASCAR finally is waking up to this. And unfortunately, it took the death of George Floyd and the protests worldwide to bring the subject to light, that it just has got to stop.
A change is going to come, as Sam Cooke once said.
Yeah. And when it comes to sports, Mike, we're just going to have to wait. It's just going to be a long summer, an interesting summer. But at the same time, as time goes on, I think more and more of us are becoming accustomed to spending more time at home, to not going to restaurants and ordering in or cooking at home, to spending time with our friends, quality time, the way you and I are via Zoom or, you know, phoning someone, eventually being able to get together with four or five other people outside of your bubble. It's coming.
Well,
people
even
asked me. I saw some people actually the other day around the corner from me.
I think it's
there
now.
And they're sitting outside on their deck.
Right.
There's about six of them.
Are they 6 feet apart?
They were 6 feet apart.
I think you can do that now. Like
can you do that indoors?
No. I don't. I think this is where the communication has been pretty shitty, to be honest. But I believe, and maybe it's because I've decided I'm going to follow my own instinct on this and what I'm pretty educated on it. I'm reading about it all the time. So for my family, you can meet a friend outside. Like I can meet you outside as long as we stay 6 feet apart.
Right.
And I feel that's safe.
And we're at the time of year now where just about everybody can go outside.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say that. People in apartment buildings, that's tough, man. Because if you wanted to sit out on if you had a balcony, they would still have to come through your apartment. But I think that slowly but surely, we're going to get used to being closer to people physically that we haven't been before. But we're still a long way away from going to, well, first of all, restaurants, but certainly concerts or sporting events. I don't see that happening until we get a vaccine.
I don't see that happening until we get a vaccine either. I don't even know. Like I'm apparently my 6-year-old is supposed to have a soccer league starting in July. Like they're just waiting for some permission from the health officials, but they explain how it's going to be. I mean, I'll be honest. I paid for it. I got the email of when it starts up and what the rules will be. And we're just waiting for the go ahead on this. I got to say, until there's a vaccine, I don't know how kids get together and play house league soccer, but you know,
or any sport.
Well, any sport, right, any sport. But I don't know.
And so, if you're the parent of a child that plays hockey, soccer, basketball, baseball, football, even flag football, volleyball, I mean, except for golf and tennis, and any racket sport, maybe badminton, pickleball, where you can maintain your 6 foot distance.
Right.
Those are okay. But I mean, it must be awfully difficult for authorities to go, that sport, yes, that sport, no, that sport, yes, that sport, no, that sport, no, that sport, no.
Right. Right.
The other one is, you know, parents, as you know, get a tremendous satisfaction of being able to watch their children play. So how does that work? Okay, the kids can go back and play. The parents have to stay separate. You know,
yeah, parents behind would have the glass. Parents would have to be 6 feet apart.
Parents would have to be 6 feet apart. And since so outdoor sports you're okay with, but what about indoors? Could you go and watch your kid play hockey?
Right.
Ceilings are pretty high in the arenas. 6 foot distancing.
And is it worth it? Difficult. Like, we're not talking about people who are playing for their scholarship or trying to get, you know, a professional NHL career or whatever. Like, we're talking about kids, supposed to be like a social activity and to have fun and stay healthy and get out there. I'm not, you know, at some point you have to decide if it's, is it worth the risk? So every parent's making that call over the next, until we get a vaccine, which could be a year away.
Another one is college eligibility. Like, suppose this was my year, this was my senior year, it was my draft year, and I'm not going to have sports. Can I defer that since there wasn't going to be any sports? Can I come back next year and play my senior year?
Right.
Because that losing a year, as anyone knows, certainly in education or in, you know, your development as an athlete, to lose a year, you know, can be critical in your progress, but also to lose that year of eligibility, which was a building block to get to where you wanted to go. Yeah, how do you get that year back? Can you defer? Will schools allow for it?
Right.
And all that stuff.
It's a clusterfuck, Hepsi. That's my term for it.
I could not have said it better myself, Mike. And on that note, let's wrap up this edition. Episode 189 of Hepsi on Sports. Thanks to Toronto Mike, as always, for production and inspiration. And thanks to our great sponsor, Crosswinds Golf and Country Club, for their support. You can play golf. You will be safe. You'll have nothing to worry about. And you'll have a wonderful experience. You get back out there. The splendor, the glory of Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in Burlington. Go to crosswindsgolf.com. You will not play a finer course. And they've got million-dollar views. Take your breath away. But sometimes you need that, especially in these times. You need to be able to just go, oh, life is good. Thanks for allowing us into your headspace, folks. Back with another episode of Hebsy on Sports next week. Until then, stay safe. So long for now. This podcast has been produced by TMDS and accelerated by Rome Phone. Rome Phone brings you the most reliable virtual phone service to run your business and protect your home number from unwanted calls. Visit romephone.ca to get started.